This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It's not a smooth delivery when you see these tutus on the road, I have to say. So e-commerce, e-hailing foods delivery, same-day courier services, they've all spurred on a new kind of transport economy. It's the motorcycle delivery business. Bikes offer a quick, low-cost solution. And perhaps that's why we're just seeing bikes multiplying in numbers on the roads. But the riders, I don't know if you feel the way I do, they can sometimes be such a nuisance on the road. They cut corners, they overtake quickly, and sometimes they don't even observe the rules of a traffic circle or a roundabout or a four-way stop in the middle of load shedding. They just go through whilst everybody's working in a rhythm, in a system. And so because of the way they drive, it can seem quite hazardous and hairy driving alongside these motorcyclists. So let's find out about the newest users on the road as we talk smart mobility in this era. We're joined by Bongani Mthombeni Mwela, who's the director of smart mobility at Royal Haskoning DHV. Bongani, good morning.
Good morning, Lerato. How are you?
Fine, thank you, ma'am. And did I say that correctly? Haskoning DHV.
Correct, Royal Haskoning DHV.
Royal Haskoning. Okay, you know, I studied German for a year and I only remember like 10 words. I'm always showing off, but really that's just like a year's worth of orals. Okay, thanks so much for coming through. Listen, I don't know if I'm over-exaggerating or overly sensitive, but I feel like there are more motorcycles on the road, are there?
It feels that way. However, they aren't. It is estimated that there's about 50,000 of these motorbikes that are going around for fuel, checkers, deliveries, etc. Mm-hmm. So I suppose when you are driving and they are cutting through the traffic, it does seem that there are a lot on the road. What has happened is that the e-commerce market has definitely ballooned in a big way.
Yeah.
So there's been a heck of a lot more of them on the road.
Okay, but they're not dominating the road.
No, they're not.
Okay, but it is interesting is that there's the synergy now, as you're saying, between e-commerce and the fact that we can buy our shopping online and then the shopping gets delivered in 60 minutes or a day, and it's coming through these motorcycles. So there's something quite positive about it, but what are the hazards? So let's talk about pros and cons of the motorcycle economy.
Okay. So this e-commerce market has ballooned certainly in a big way. A heck of a lot more of these deliveries. During the pandemic, it really just sparked the whole industry a lot more. You can now order your deliveries. They can come within 60 minutes with the checker 60-60. With Uber Eats, for example, you can order your meals and it gets delivered to your home. So we've seen a transition in the market where your deliveries can now come in a quick and agile manner. Mm. So these bikes are agile, they're versatile, they can cut through traffic quite quickly, they can deliver your goods and services in a short period of time, whereas historically you would have to wait a couple of days to get certain deliveries, which would be delivered by a minivan. So that has certainly been a pro, and it has also opened up the possibility for small businesses to thrive, to purchase their own little scooters, and to have their own delivery services. So it's been beneficial to the economy. So a recent F&B Merchant Services report estimates that the South African online e-commerce market is just under 200 billion rand per annum.
Yeah.
And it predicts that the market will double to 400 billion rand by 2025, with over a billion transactions per annum. So it's been very good for the economy. So that's a big pro, right?
Yeah.
The cons, as you mentioned in your intro, we've of course seen some of these drivers, they haven't practiced good safety standards. Some of these bikes are not roadworthy.
Yeah.
There's also been issues with the fact that a lot of non-South Africans or foreign nationals are also on the roads with not the right documentation and permits. So I suppose we're not doing enough on a regulatory point of view as a country.
Okay.
So that could be seen as a disadvantage or a con in this instance.
We're going to talk about some of those cons. I've flagged them up myself here. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the positives. You know, this new e-commerce economy, I'm going to say, or sector of the economy that's coming up, as you're saying, estimated at nearly 200 billion and rising.
And
what it's also doing is it's creating multiple dimensions of online digital sales. So it's not just we're shopping for our groceries online, we're buying our food online. And to that end, e-hailing services like Uber have added additional service offerings like package and delivery service collection. So you say to me, Lerato, I've bought your birthday present, you weren't home, I've left it at Power. And I say, oh, I'm not at Power. So Uber, what they do is they've got a service where I can literally send a car to come and fetch my birthday present and bring it home without doing the drive myself. And so these kinds of formulations of services are coming up in different ways. So new service lines, I guess, is what I'm talking about.
No, 100%. And I suppose as something starts booming, it also presents the opportunity for something else to come up. There's innovation and technology that's on the go, and we work in a very digital environment. So you can get an app, you can get someone to go and collect your delivery. You get medical services that are using them to shut off blood samples and things like that around. So it's definitely growing. And something that we have seen in countries such as Kigali, or Rwanda, rather, have introduced ride sharing as a way for getting around. Mm-hmm. So using your motorbikes as a means of transportation.
Yeah.
So it's not so popular in South Africa as yet. We see it in other countries, but that is possibly what's going to be happening next. So it certainly opened the door for immense opportunity.
So when you're talking about ride sharing, the first thing that comes to my mind is what I've seen in Uganda and Kampala. There are motorcycles everywhere, and they are a form of a taxi. So there are minibus taxis, there are bigger buses, but for people who want to get somewhere quickly, they get on a motorbike. It's called a boda boda. And I think this is what you're also talking about in terms of what we're seeing in Kigali, in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. In Nigeria, they're called okadas. But in places like West Africa, they've become such a menace, such a nuisance on the road, because they are pollutants, they emit a lot of CO2, they are very noisy, and, you know, they are also the cause of many car accidents. Is that there's been legislation to try to roll back the number of bikes on the road versus rolling out more bikes on the road?
Yes, well, certainly legislation then has to, you know, it plays a critical role in that instance. So there's examples where it's not happening, like in South Africa, not so much. And we can certainly learn from the West Africans where they become delinquents pretty much on the roads. So it all speaks to how we regulate it, making sure that all the health and safety protocol is in place, that these bikes are roadworthy, and that it is legislated and regulated. So we can certainly learn from what's happening in the rest of the continent. But it does provide a mechanism for people to get around in an agile way, and of course to ensure that the drivers actually adhere to the
And then when you talk about this, Ofense is reiterating your observation that it's a booming new, you know, logistics side of the e-commerce industry. But it seems, now we don't know whether that's true, but it seems that it's dominated by foreigners, particularly on the food delivery side. And as you suggested, the concern is that many of them are not documented, but there they are on the road. So From a safety, security, immigration and regulatory point of view, what would your suggestions be?
Well, certainly this is it's a problem in South Africa, in that it appears that a lot of the motorbike riders are foreign nationals. It appears that way, so it's a perception. I'm not entirely sure whether it is a fact, but I think that we need to certainly tighten our electric. So, for example, AMPDs in Johannesburg needs to make sure that their voices are heard and that they're very strict with enforcing certain regulations and laws around motorbike safety, checking that all the documentation is in check, and actually that with immigration, we make sure that we check the permit. Because as much as, you know, illegal immigrants are riding these bikes, we find that there's illegal immigrants in other sectors and in other careers as well. So we need to just tighten our belt, I think, as a nation around that, and just ensure that people get the work permits that they require and the documentation that they need in place to be able to fulfill the roles and the jobs that they are doing. And it spans across the board.
And I think from what I can tell, it's really the responsibility of the hiring agency. So if you're signing up for an e-hailing service, the company itself doesn't have a local office, right? It has an associate satellite office. The actual company sits in the Netherlands, for instance. And so when you're signing up on an app to be a vendor, but the employer is somewhere else, it starts to create a murkiness around employment practices. And this is why even South African Uber drivers, for instance, have had a real problem around pay increases and, you know, the company subscribing to various, what would we call them, hiring practices and talent retention practices, because the company's actually not here. It's not registered here. And so I think this is the Home Affairs has to look at some of those issues around human resource management when they are allowing companies from abroad to transact in South Africa. But we digress. When we come back, Bongani Mthombeni Mola, I'd like to know where these bikes are from. In other words, you know, where are they made? How are they manufactured? Are they from the secondhand market? Because some of them look a little bit light, flimsy versus the sturdy ones we see bikers in biker clubs riding.
Wheels on Wednesday.
Yes, they are motorcyclists, they are border boarders, they are the delivery guys, and sometimes they're a real nuisance. So let's talk about the bikes we're actually seeing, because there are bikes, Bongani Mthombeni Mola, there are bikes, right? And bikers, they have outfits for their bikes. And then there are these bikes, and these ones look quite light on the road, nimble, and it just looks like if there was a very big, violent wind, it would just blow them off course.
Yes, it's a very interesting question. Where do these bikes actually come from? And there's so many of them around, right? So these bikes are typically between 125 and 150cc motorbikes.
Right.
And you'll find that your large companies like your Checkers and your Woolworths, they'll own their own fleet. Typically, these motorcycles are imported. And there are some delivery companies that will rent out a fleet of these bikes. So there's a company in Cape Town that will, they're called Mobile Max, and their business is, you know, to lease these types of bikes. And I recall there was a time where they were importing 10 to 15 of these Honda bikes a month. So the bulk of them are typically imported, those ones that are roadworthy and they look sturdy, so they're not going to blow over. But however, you'll find that a lot of people that go into this type of business, especially that are starting out, will want to then procure a secondhand motorcycle in the market. The key here is to ensure that they are roadworthy, which is why we need to partner with our traffic officials, the likes of your JMPDs, your TMPDs, to make sure that they stop these motorbikes and check for roadworthiness and that sort of thing. And it also just ensures the safety, not just of the motorbike driver, but everyone else on the road.
Does it make a difference, really? I mean, I'm reading here that there's a very popular one for this kind of merchant logistics trade is called the Big Boy Velocity 150. And it's typically priced around 20,000 rand. So it's reasonably affordable, and which is why it's very, very popular. So, you know, what are the variations of bikes that we're talking about here?
Well, you would typically try and keep your cost base low and have a bike that is going to be agile. You cannot have a 1,000cc motorbike doing delivery. It also is not conducive to the business model. So there has to be an affordability aspect of it. So they're typically between 125 and 150 cc's. And you get different service providers that actually make these bikes or that you can buy them from. So it's all about the business model and the roadworthiness of the bikes, really. The bikes are a commodity. So whoever buys a fleet is at liberty to select whatever they want and make sure that their business model is as profitable as possible.
Now, here's a question I'm asking, and it's my question, really. So if it sounds a bit blonde, well, then, you know. So it comes with a box, or you've then got to find the box.
What do you mean it comes with a box?
You know, it's got like a little boot where they put everything in it.
Yes. you can certainly buy one that's already customized with the little boot. But there isn't a production line in South Africa or an assembly line, rather, that would put it all together. But I presume you can buy it as a full-on package with the delivery box.
Okay. I just needed to know that because the box itself looks like it could tip over, at the drop of a hat. So you talk about business models, and I think this is very important for young entrepreneurs. So I'm Lerato, I start a cake business, I'm being enterprising, and my business grows, and I deliver cakes, and I want to do it via this mechanism. Don't know if that's the smartest thing, but let's just say for argument's sake, right? So how do I incorporate a bike into my business plan? Because it's going to be an important part of my being able to control the value chain and reduce costs versus ordering a driver and, you know, an Uber driver every day or a Taxify driver. I can have a bike, a small bike, as part of my limited fleet and do my deliveries for dresses or cakes or whatever. So how do I write that into my plan?
Well, you would have to do a financial model, right? Even before you consider the delivery of your products or your cakes. Mm. So you can consider outsourcing, which some of these big companies actually do. They outsource their delivery model to another company that will handle it for themselves.
Okay.
And then you weigh the cost versus having that cost in-house. So you would have to appoint a driver yourself. So there's, of course, the cost of your driver. There's the cost of the bike. There's the fuel cost, et cetera. And you factor that into your business model and you weigh the cost. So the whole point of going into business to be sustainable, to be profitable. And once you've done that cost revenue analysis, you're best placed to make a more informed decision. Is also, what is the radius that you're going to be operating in with petrol prices going up, unless you go the e-mobility route, which is the way to go with a just energy transition, right? You weigh the cost of how far is this bike going to go, how much is it going to cost you on a monthly basis, what is the driver cost going to be? So all the costs that are around the delivery aspects of your product.
Right.
So you really sense that. And then, of course, there's the cost of actually baking your cake and marketing, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So all that has to go into your business plan.
So I love what you're saying. So sometimes it might not be feasible or sensible to own a bike. It might just be better to subcontract a company that can do the deliveries for you, because you only do the deliveries twice a week. So you don't have to have a bike that you have to maintain and a driver you have to pay. And he's only riding the bike every 2 days, whereas somebody else can do that for you. So think about all those kinds of issues before you factor in.
Sorry to interrupt you, Lerato. What I've noticed recently was that it's created a great opportunity for young entrepreneurs who want to purchase these bikes. Mm. Okay, assuming these bikes are roadworthy, all documentation is in place, all that stuff is in check. And that is the core of their business. Their day-to-day business is the delivery of various goods and services.
Wonderful.
And so you would be one of their clients as a chef or baker or whatever, and you would enter into a contract and they would provide the bike, the driver, the report, the time, and of course you could perhaps have a tracker that, you know, you can see where your cake is at any given time.
Right.
So it's created a great business and a great opportunity for young entrepreneurs to go into rent to own type of models with certain bike service providers as a small business offering, which is great.
Okay, so you could actually, that could be your logistics business. You own 5 bikes and you rent them out and you provide that service of ferrying goods uh-huh. to market for another entrepreneur. And so you create that synergy. And then finally, you know, we spoke about the pollution aspect as I'm giving you examples from Kampala and Lagos and Manila and Bangkok as well. They've got a big motorbike taxi industry service. But what's happening now is there are calls in terms of the just energy transition you're talking about for manufacturers to think about creating cleaner bikes. And what do we mean by that? To electrify gas-powered motorcycle taxis. So what are the new technologies that can be adopted in the manufacturing of these bikes to make them leaner and cleaner and I guess cheaper to run outside of the fuel economy?
Carbon emissions are certainly a massive problem. And in those types of countries where the quantum of these petrol bikes is massive, of course, the carbon emissions are something to take into consideration. At the moment in South Africa, the carbon emissions of the bikes that we have in the country is less than what you would see in these countries that have a greater quantum of these bikes. However, with the move towards the green economy with just energy transition, there is a massive need for electric bikes, electric vehicles. And it also opens up another market segment for the battery trade and the charging stations and to actually have small businesses that are custodians of these batteries that these bikes will require. So it certainly creates an opportunity to tap into the e-mobility sector and actually just have electric bike transition and try and phase out the petrol bikes as much as possible. Of course, there's a cost aspect, so you'll find that your small businesses will still prefer to have your petroleum bikes. And this is where legislation also comes to the fore, where private sector can actually give input into government, into policy, into legislation, to see how we can actually regulate the entire EV, electric, micro-mobility sector. But it's certainly something that we need to take into consideration because the technologies are there. It's just a matter of incorporating it into a business model and being able to create small businesses that can also support the industry. Yeah.
We love solutions, and you've spoken to us about a few solutions for the entrepreneur, for the logistics side of a small business, and for the green environmental aspect as well. Just reminding us that we are sharing this road increasingly now with the Border Borders 222 motorcycle delivery man and woman. And it feels like a lot, but so far only 50,000 on the roads and rising. Thank you for your time, Bongani Mthombeni Mwela, Director of Smart Mobility at Royal Haskoning DHV.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.